Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour on October 31st, 2019. And since this is Halloween, the scariest night of the year, I'm going to have a scary night show. All the topics I'm going to talk about have a scary twist to them. So at any rate, except for the first one here, this is not very, I think most of you can handle this, that my frequency, the summertime frequency, because I'm on the cusp of evening, as we go into winter, the my shortwave frequency changes to one that's more compatible with nighttime, because the shortwave bounces off the ionosphere. The nighttime ionosphere is different than the daytime ionosphere, and different frequencies work better at night. So since I'm right on that cusp, in the summertime, I have one frequency, and in the wintertime, I have a different frequency, and so it cuts over. They've chosen the same day to be the day as, or the same week as the change in clocks. So anyway, my show now will be transmitting on 5.935 megahertz, so if you're a shortwave listener, that's what's going on. Just this is all explained on my webpage also. So that's now I'll get into the really scary stories here. What if, let's say this, what if a political candidate came on the scene and wanted to make major changes to a political party and to the country and the way the country is run? But that political candidate was really thin on understanding how the world really works. Now, if you listen to my show, you've had an education over the years. In fact, somebody called in. This was interesting. Somebody called in yesterday when I was guest on John Moore's show, and they said, who really does run the world? And so I gave a couple-minute explanation that when you see things going on, the people like the Clintons and the Bushes, they are not, you know, they are major players in what you see, but they're just clogs in a wheel. They get their worldly rewards by the benefits they get from being powerful on Earth, but they take their marching orders from above. And those people you never see, nor do you hear of. And it literally goes back to the World Bank. And these are the controllers that have been going through the generations, through the millennia, really controlling what's going on in the world. They transcend international boundaries. They create wars. Anyway, I'm not going to go into all of that detail. That's an extremely complicated topic. But the point is, what if you have a political candidate who doesn't understand this? That thinks that if you become president, you're going to be in charge. You know, who's the CIA? They're the police force of the World Bank. They have nothing to do with the United States, never did, never will. You know, they're a completely independent group of people, and their money literally comes from international drug and human trafficking and illicit operations. Laundering money through Google. They own high-tech companies, Google, YouTube, Facebook, etc., through proxies, and they also topple foreign governments, they kill foreign leaders, they rig elections in foreign countries and in our very own country, etc. So, I've mentioned before the name of Tulsi Gabbard, and there's a representative from Hawaii that's running for president, and that she's right in the face of Hillary Clinton, which I think is wonderful. Somebody is actually stepping up, and it's a woman. If it was a man, they'd say, oh, he's against women, whatever. But she's a woman. She's right in the face of Hillary Clinton. But at the same time, she says she's for the Iran deal. She would open up the Iran nuclear deal again and get back into that. Well, little does she know that that's Hillary Clinton's, one of her Hillary Clinton's international babies. The Iran deal was cut through the Obama administration with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And what they did, and this is related to burning people off their property in Oregon and chasing people off their property in Nevada to take over these properties, which were critical to the sale of uranium to Russia. through the Uranium One company, a wholly owned subsidiary of Russia in Canada. And so Hillary Clinton got hundreds of million dollars of kickback into the Clinton Foundation for setting this up and managing it, where Iran then ended up with that uranium. It went out of Saskatchewan and Alberta and Oregon to Russia. And then Russia sold it to Iran through the back door, and it was paid directly by the Obama administration under the watchful eye of Hillary Clinton. So anyway, if you're Tulsi Gabbard and you want to be against Hillary Clinton by saying that you would open up the Iran nuclear deal, is it just proves to me you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what's going on this planet, and you really shouldn't be president if that's your level of knowledge. You better sit down with somebody who knows what's going on and get the real scoop. So that's pretty scary. That's a Halloween number one story for scariness. Somebody who wants to be president but has no clue how the world operates and who are the operators, who's in charge, who's running the show, etc. And somebody that thinks she's going to be president if elected. Well, I got news for you. You better know who your controllers are, and they're expecting to run you. And that's the clash that Trump is having right now with the CIA, because he's operating as president. And the CIA has run the White House since they killed John Kennedy. So anyway, you better find out what's going on in the world. Like my good old Uncle Ben used to say, he says, open up your big brown eyes and see what's going on around you in the world. And that applies to Tulsi Gabbard. And by the way, congratulations to her for getting in the face of Hillary Clinton. Okay, on to the next scary topic. This one is really scary. This comes in from, the tip on this came in from a guy that calls me occasionally. He's in Ohio, and he lives near this coal plant that's up on Lake Erie that's being decommissioned. But at any rate, it turns out they blew this coal plant up. They decommissioned it and then blew it up. And now they're digging massive trenches where burned coal. What do they call that? They call it slag, I think it's called, after they burn the coal and then they pile it out in a big pile. Well, that slag pile is full of mercury and toxins. Arsenic, selenium, boron, cadmium, mercury, and lead, other horrific deposits. And this is, when it rains, it leaches this into the groundwater. And so it's already in the first level groundwater, and they expect, I mean, there's no way you can stop this from getting into the deeper wells that ultimately give Ohio its water supply. So really scary stuff. That, you know, one of the unspoken pollution parts of coal is the slag pile, which is leaching toxins, extremely deadly toxins, into the water table. And this is going to keep going on. So they're making a kind of a token effort at cleaning this up by digging trenches around where the slag pile used to be. And now that raises an interesting question. What have they done with the slag pile? Where's all of that being dumped, you know, out of sight, out of mind? Anyway, that's pretty scary. That's a good scary Halloween story. Put that in your pumpkin and light it. Okay, just a quick note about last week. If you were listening to last week's show live, you probably didn't notice, but I got chopped off, and it was a technical difficulty. Nothing nefarious going on. It's just one of those things where my own internal equipment went south, and I think it was in the microphone. I really don't know. I haven't been able to trace it all down. But in these kind of procedures, then the studio patches in my previous week's show. And it cut over, and all of a sudden I was talking about one thing, and it kind of slid into another topic. And it was at about 14 minutes to go in the show. So if you want to hear the real ending of last week's show, go to my archive page where the actually end of the show was recorded and kept on the archive, if that makes sense. So anyway, if you want to hear the ending of last week's show, and it's a very good ending. It's where I talk about pollution of energy, and so in the cost, true cost of energy. So at any rate, go back and listen to last week's show on the archives. If nothing else, the last 14 minutes, or listen to the whole show again, because that last 14 minutes ties into previous comments in the show. So that's not too scary. That's just a little side note. This is pretty scary. The solar and wind industries are now going to combine. They're finding strength in numbers, or strength in unity. And so next year at the Wind Energy Association meetings, they're going to invite the solar industry. And the reason is because they have to pressure Washington for more subsidies. Right now, the solar industry gets like 10 times as much subsidy as the wind industry, but the wind industry gets a boatload. They get up to 35% of their income comes from you. Now, put that in your Halloween pumpkin and light it on, light the candle. You're subsidizing companies putting in wind installations that don't work, and to the tune of 35%. In other words, if it weren't for you paying these subsidies, these companies would not be in existence. They couldn't turn a profit. And what's interesting now is a lot of investors in wind, after seeing the return on investment, because they're trying to sell the energy now, they're not making their money off subsidies. They're making their money off of actual sale of the product, the useful good of the product, which is energy. They're realizing these things don't work. So the stock in the wind energy companies, in a lot of cases, these are the intermediate companies that buy the installations, the wind farms, where they actually sell a contract to a supplier, an electric power company, and then they all try and turn a profit on this. But what's going on is that because now people are making looking for a profit from the actual sale of electricity instead of getting their money from government subsidies, then the stocks are falling like Humpty Dumpty off the Great Wall. So that's just something very interesting to see. But the point of my story is that solar and wind industries are in Washington again, begging for subsidies. And if you can, if you have contact with a senator, a representative, tell them, hey, get rid of all these subsidies. You're subsidizing. Look at the way they've got this rigged. You have to be a bona fide one of their members to get the subsidies. So they got the system rigged. And so in my system, the wing generator does not need subsidies. My profit is actually real based on the fact that the wing generator works. It actually produces energy at an efficient price to actually where it will be profitable. It does not need subsidies. So I'm trying to compete against an industry where only their clubhouse members are members, and to the tune of 35% of their product. So tell your congressmen and senators, etc., cut these profits. They've been there since the early 2000s, and every time they come back, they say, well, in 5 years, we'll be profitable. We won't need subsidies anymore. And at the end of the 5 years, they come back and they say, well, we're almost there, but we still need some more subsidies. The reality is none of these solar and wind, three-blade wind turbines, none of them would be there if it were not for really high subsidies. I don't know of any other industry that is subsidized like wind and solar. So anyway, here's an interesting question. It's a what if. What if they manage somehow? I don't think they're going to. I think this impeachment thing is going to fall flat on its face. But, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball here, but what if Trump was impeached? Could he run again in 2020? And I in looking into it, I can't find any reason, if a guy's impeached for doing an impeachable crime, if there is such a thing, could that person run again and become president again under, you know, the massive voter turnout? And I believe the response is that yeah. So anyway, that whole impeachment thing is pretty scary. If you look at these people that are, anyway, I'm not going to go into politics. Not going to touch that. But a very scary story. Having a tribunal in secret hearings. That the way it's being operated, it's right out of the Gulag Russia. A listener wrote in and asked about the Betz limit. Now, the Betz limit is a hypothetical limit of energy you can extract from a Newtonian fluid, what is called Newtonian fluid, but more specifically, a non-compressible Newtonian fluid. And so, anyway, it turns out that on July 26, 2018, I went into a bit of a dissertation on this. I'm not going to repeat any of it here. But suffice it to say that this is one of the biggest boondoggles. And really, in terms of engineering, results in a very scary story where you have tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of engineers who have gone through school. There might be people that even got an A on a test by responding about this concept. It's called BETZ, Betz limit. And it was originally, the original studies were done in the early 1900s. And there were a couple people that came up with this at the same time. The theoretical limit for how much energy you can extract from a moving column of non-compressible fluid. Well, anyway, air is very much compressible. That's why we don't use it in hydraulics. You go out to any hydraulics operator and say that you want to replace their hydraulic fluid with air. They go, no, we got to get the air out of the system. Air is not compatible with a non-compressible fluid. So anyway, I could go on and on. It's a very long story, but very scary to imagine that there are engineers out there, tens of thousands of them, who don't think, that are told something, and they believe it, they will regurgitate it without thinking. Isn't that amazing? But that's the way our educational system is, and the people learn very early in life. If you repeat what the teacher says, you get an A. If you repeat something different from what the teacher says, you get bad grades and you don't succeed. So anyway, it's a clear-cut case of bad engineering in the United States, especially in the United States and in Europe also, where they simply believe something that they're told. Anyway, here's something that... I thought, I've mentioned this before on the show, I'm going to start calling myself an Irish American. maybe I can get some reparations or some special handling somehow. I should have done this a long time ago. Can you imagine me at Cornell when they were trying to fire me or, you know, going through the process and saying, hey, you can't do that. I'm an Irish American. And, you know, if I were anything else... you have to understand if you, I'm not going to say it out loud, but you can probably guess who operates Cornell University, what sect of people. So a blue-eyed Midwestern, honest, hardworking Irish American did not exactly fit in to their empire, let's put it that way. So anyway, I'm just joking about this, but maybe we should, the Irish out there should join together and start looking for the reparations we demand from the ill treatment we got when we came to the United States. But as a true Irishman, we forget the past. On St. Patrick's Day, we invite the whole world to be Irish, and that's the way we solve that particular problem. Anyway, on the California fires, my goodness, yeah, California's burning up. It happens every year. It looks like a bad one this year, where they get the, this year I think it's worse because there were rains, there were actual rains. The drought caused a lot of growth, and then the dry season come, it all dries up, and then any kind of spark at all will set these off. So you have the California hills with wildfires, etc. But the other thing, the whole issue relative to this show and what I talk about, is that, and this is the scary part, back to Halloween, a very scary part of this story, that the PG&E, the power company that manages much of California's power, Pacific Gas and Electric Corporation, said that it could be 10 years before they get their act together where they can supply reliable power. And, of course, they're going through the semblance of a bankruptcy procedure. It's really a mess. But also I've seen inklings of other companies around the United States, power companies, that are getting ready to go bankrupt. And I see these indicators. I'm not going to name any, but you can probably guess from what I've talked about before that some of these companies are on the verge of bankruptcy. Serious, serious financial problems. And so that's pretty scary when we're talking about electricity. Besides water, probably one of the most used commodities in the United States. I remember they did a survey. This is back when I was young. I don't know how young, younger than I am now. But they did a survey in Detroit, and they wanted to know what was the most used article thing in, you know, in the city. And, you know, it might be a toothbrush. It might be, you know, you can imagine, you know, the most used item in Detroit was a basketball. So anyway, back to the California fires. Very scary stuff as we head into the future with a very questionable future as far as energy, especially electric energy. And the main sources of energy that actually supply us with energy, you have the solar and wind industries, which will never, ever solve the world energy problem, let alone that of the U.S. Then you have these fires, and then you have electric companies going out of business and trying to operate, but their overhead is going to go through the ceiling. I knew an accountant who worked for PG&E, and he said their philosophy there was that you bought as much stuff, you created as much expense as possible. And so if you had a desk to buy, you didn't buy one desk. You had to buy a minimum number of desks. You had to spend as much as possible. And the reason for that was because at the end of the year, they could go back to the rates and say, look at, here's how much it cost us, operating costs included, to sell electricity and gas to the public. Just a quick comment, and this is a general comment, although I could be specific and name names. But the internet is full of crackpots and wannabes. And so a lot of these float around YouTube. The end result is, and I gave some lectures, the very first two of my paid cast lectures, if you go back to August of 2016, the first two lectures I gave were how to recognize web pages that are being run by charlatans, imposters, wannabes, whatever you want to call them. It could be a web page, could be a YouTube channel, it could be a blog, it could be a lot of things. But how do you tell? And I would suggest you go back and listen to my paid cast, those first, because it's very extensive. But there are a couple simple rules that you can follow. For example, does the person identify themselves? That's one of the big things. Do you really know who this person is? And number two, do they have any basis for their authority, or did they just kind of start this? Number three, here's one of the telltale signs that somebody's getting a lot of help in the background, and this is not just their effort, is do they have a glossy, really highly produced page, especially if it comes out daily? Where do these people get all the time? And I can tell you from selling my books and being on the internet, selling my water filters and stuff, this is not a multi-million dollar business. This is not enough to support people with a bright, shiny income. And so the end result is, where do they get the information? And a lot of this information comes from what appear to be technical sources. So the bottom line is, somebody's feeding them information. So when you see it a little too glossy for the person that claims the who they are. Another thing is a telltale sign is that you look in the blog, etc., and you get rave reviews all the time about how just tremendous this person is and how amazing the information is. And then another thing is that a lot of the information given out you could actually find on just an average news channel, or in the case of if it's about weather or something, on an average weather channel. So these are things that you look for to determine that a page is phony. And so if you look at my page, for example, if you look at my history, you look at my books, you look at my published papers, all of the work I've done over the decades and years, it is a very graphic track record or paper trail of what I've done and when I did it, etc. And so, and it's all there. It's all very visible. So there's no question about the work that I've done. And of course, I worked alone. In the time I was working on things, there was literally nobody else even imagining what I was doing, let alone doing something similar. And my work covers across the board, from the subatomic up to cosmological scales and everything in between, planets, comets, asteroids, you name it. You know, the electric universe term I defined in one of my papers published in the book that I had in 1979, in that 79 to 81 time frame. So I have a track record that's very visible, a paper trail. And so if you want to compare anybody to me, that's all right there. It's all visible. And so at any rate, there's a lot of Johnny-come-latelys that's the best term. That's a term that Warner Sizemore used. He was Velikovsky's personal secretary. And when I asked him about this phenomenon, because Velikovsky was one of the true people that was an independent investigator. He was studying calendars, not comets. He was studying historical events and language and calendars, and happened to stumble across this issue of Venus being a comet and all the ancient societies talking about this. That's what got Velikovsky going. But he was one of the true pioneers, and Warner Sizemore was his personal secretary. Warner was a friend of mine, and I interviewed him. He's got a number of interviews on my 18-hour CD set that I sell at my webpage. But I asked Warner about this one time. He said, "Well, how do you deal with this, or how do you view these people that just appear? And all of a sudden, they're there, and they really don't know what they're talking about. They pretend like they do, and to a third grader, they might be able to fool a third grader for a little while. But I said, Warner, what do you think about these people? And he says, yeah, well, they're Johnny come latelys. So that's Warner's term. That's how he described it, because he saw it all the time also. You know, that these people would pop up and all of a sudden they were Velikovsky supporters, or they were, you know, electric universe this or something else, whatever. And, you know, that was his comment, you know, that there were, you know, imposters, charlatans, wannabes popping up out of the woodwork. And, in, you know, when you look at it, possibly trying to make a dime off of this, not really true to the ethics of an investigator who puts out far more than they make. And like I say, the other thing is, one of the key things here is invisible source of income. You can look at what I do. I don't have sponsors. I don't take donations. If you buy something from me, you get something in return, a very high quality something. And it's the profit of that that I get to keep because of the, you know, say my water filters or my books or CDs or DVDs or historical work or the recalendar sun star clock, which I invented, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't have an invisible source of income. But you look at my webpage, it, you can see very clearly I don't have people helping me daily with my webpage. It's something I do myself. And it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of times very behind. It's a really old style page, and people criticize it because it's hard to find things there. But it's one of the indicators that I don't have this nice, cushy, under the table flow of money coming at me every day or every week. And I don't have handlers. I do my work. I do what I want. I am on the cutting edge of every field that I'm in, you know, and, but there again, you come back to the wannabes. They appear to have an invisible source of income. So somebody's feeding them money under the table to keep doing what they're doing. And then, of course, the message keeps referring back to standard science. And so anyway, because they want to somehow bolster standard science, even though they try to position themselves as being opposed to standard science, as some kind of renegade or something. Anyway, those are all the telltale signs. And so I'm just going through this because there's so many of these popping up all over the place. And then one of the final things is, if they do have a book or books, publications, you look at them and they're glossy. You know, they were printed at a printing house and probably had a lot of help from their handlers and suppliers. So anyway, those are the main ways that you test to see if a page is legitimate or not. Okay, and that's a pretty scary thing too, because if you're out on the internet, you're trying to find real information. And especially if people are a little bit naive, they're not really scientifically astute, they can be trapped by some of these web pages that are leading them down the wrong road and giving them a lot of baloney misinformation. And now there is also one additional concept here, and this is also a telltale sign, is that they do not reference people that came before them. The referencing is a little bit, what'd you say, lacking or just plain missing. And so this is one of the biggest telltale signs. If somebody has a web page or a YouTube channel or something like that, and they're talking about space weather or weather on Earth or whatever is related topics or you know, space issues, and they don't reference my work, which you know, involves all of these areas, that's kind of an indicator that, but you see my work mixed in continually, that's an indicator that, yeah, these people are loose footing it. And there's a reason they're not referencing my work, because they're borrowing it on a daily basis. So those are the issues. And once again, very scary to imagine there are people like that out in the world, but they're all over. There's a con man born every minute, an honest man born, you know, I'm not sure, not so frequently. I'm going to change topics here just a little bit, discussing batteries. Every week I talk a little bit about batteries. And so this week I'm going to talk about something that might be a little remote to many of you, and that is the topic of fusion. Fusion, you hear a lot about in the news. Could there be cold fusion, a low-temperature fusion? Fusion is the process that occurs in the sun where you have a tremendous amount of power. What I discovered with my work is that the fusion in the sun is up at the surface. It's not down in the core. A very important discovery. Once again, that would clearly be a Nobel Prize-winning discovery if it were recognized. And the reason that's important is because the standard model has the fusion in the core. And why is that a problem? It's a problem because there are entities, Jupiter and Saturn being two of them, which have fusion going on in their atmosphere and do not have solid cores of the size and weight necessary to create nuclear fusion. And so, I mean, this is extremely important. But the getting back to the attempt to laboratory induce fusion in a laboratory where they are trying to create the magnetic field that would contain the currents that are necessary to kick off the fusion reaction and sustain it. That's what the tokamaks and the bigger, as they get bigger through the years, reactors, that's what they're all about. And so the issue here is that the sun's magnetic field works very differently from what they're trying to do in the laboratory. So why not reproduce what is done in nature? And that's something that I have done theoretically. So anyway, I just want to make a quick comment about that. That, in fact, the fusion reaction is a battery. It's a very good battery. And the end result is the separation of charge, which gives us the entire solar system its energy source. So if you can do that, if you can power the entire solar system, in fact, that's where Tesla was getting his energy, although he did not know it. When the Earth discharges the local electric field and that discharge occurs, that's what generates the electricity that we see up in the upper ionosphere. And it's the differential between there and ground, which powers hurricanes, tornadoes, your weather system, creates lightning in the air, etc. And that's just on little planet Earth. Jupiter has its own set of fusion batteries, its own fusion process, as does Saturn, and they have their own external electric fields, which is created by the excess current of protons that come out of the fusion process. So that's just this week's comment on battery. But there again, I remember I want to talk about scary things. It's pretty scary to imagine the amount of money that has been spent on fusion research, and they're now going back spending gazillions of dollars more for the next bigger size reactor to create the next bigger size magnetic fields to try and create nuclear fusion when that's not the process at all. Anyway, just amazing. That's pretty scary. To have your major scientists completely clueless about what is going on in fusion. So I'm going to jump gears again a little bit here. And I decided to patch in what was missing from last week's show. So you don't have to go back and listen to last week's show. Here it is. I'm going to jump topics here a little bit and ask the question, what if energy became very inexpensive? This would be a world foreign to anything that you're familiar with or that your parents or grandparents were familiar with. You would have to go back to the 1800s, literally, to find an economy that was not based on energy. back in the 1800s, there was energy. You had horses, you had mules, you had oxen, you had other forms of power, you might call it, but you did not have organized energy, nor was there the sale, organized sale of energy. And so ever since literally the early 1900s, when people bought hook, line, and sinker into electricity, it was something that, you know, improved people's lives, allowed them to work at night with lighting that was reliable, trying to study by using candlelight was not actually too productive, but electricity allowed all kinds of machines, like printing presses, like heating, like fans, like ducts, like all of the appliances that you commonly use today. Electricity became made improved life tremendously, but there was a cost to it, a very dire cost. And as energy became more available, then the cost went up proportionately, and energy became a part of almost everything. So to the point where, say, you buy a hot dog at a baseball game today, especially if you're at the World Series, a hot dog, I don't know what a hot dog costs, but very expensive. But most of the expense of that, if you take, imagine a hot dog at a stadium. Okay, the stadium has its pound of flesh it needs out of that hot dog. The overhead to run the stadium, the employees, the cleanup crew, pensions, the physical construction of the stadium. Then you have the teams, you have the royalties, and each one of these entities has its energy consumption footprint. And so by the time you pay for that $8 hot dog, let's say, about 3 cents of that actually is hot dog, bun, and mustard. And the rest of that is going to other entities. And all of those entities, one of the major line items in their existence, even though they don't know it, even though it's probably not visible, is energy. Energy for people to get to the stadium, energy for the people to live in their houses, the people that are work at the stadium, the sports announcers, all of these people. Energy is a major cost in their lives, and they all need a piece of that hot dog for this whole operation to function properly. So the energy is hidden in just about everything we do today. If you drive your car, the energy to make the car, to mine the ore, to if it's recycled steel, to recycle it, to smelt it, to purify it, to get it back to a grade of steel that you can make automobiles with, the list goes on and on. So energy is a part of just about everything. And you could make a case, and I'm just going to pick a number that's probably near realistic. I would say 98% of the cost of everything around you is related to energy, the 98% of the cost. So if you're sitting there at your desk and you have paper, if you have computers, if you have electronics, if you have pens, if you have a chair that you're sitting on or a desk, and you look at the energy that went into producing all of this, probably about 98% of the cost of everything comes back to energy. So what if we could live in a world that had extremely low price energy? Now, remember when Tesla was doing his studies back in the early 1900s, late 1800s actually, that's how far back this goes, he understood the issue of extracting energy from the air. And he really didn't know where that other end of the capacitor was. He just knew it was up there someplace. And he knew that the vertical electric field was about 300 volts per meter, extremely high. He knew that he could not extract much current from that vertical electric field because the source of the voltage was not local. It was up very high. And there again, he did not know the edge of space. He had no way of measuring it. He had no way of understanding. Tesla was probably one of the few people that understood that as the atmosphere thinned out up above and the dynamics of air pressure, etc., that there was a vacuum of space. And he probably could have guessed that it was probably between 50 and 100 miles up, you know, just as a round estimate. So he knew that to get to the current, which is current has to flow for power to develop. And so he knew he had to get up to that height, that altitude. And so when he designed the Wardenclyffe Tower, he knew that he had to basically drill through the atmosphere using a alternating electric field and a lot of power, because basically what you're doing is flipping the dipoles, the inherent dipoles in the atmosphere, in the molecules in the atmosphere, flipping them back and forth in unison and basically breaking down the dielectric. The reason the dielectric works, the dielectric properties of the atmosphere, is because the atoms are in a gas and they're random and they're moving around, and they prevent the they're a good medium for a capacitor, and that's what he knew we were dealing with. Okay, so the Tesla understood this, but he was funded by J.P. Morgan. I've talked about this before. And Morgan realized, also Westinghouse. In fact, there's apparently a new movie about this. I'm sure it's full of really a lot of disinformation about Tesla. I forget the name, but there's a new movie coming out. I'll have to do some commentary on that. And then, like I say, there's so much misinformation about Tesla. What he was doing was extracting energy from the atmosphere, from the that comes from the ionosphere. That's what drives hurricanes. That's what drives tornadoes. That's what drives electricity in the clouds. The lightning that comes above and below cloud systems, that's all driven from the vertical electric field, which is ground is one side of the capacitor, and the ionosphere is the other side of the capacitor. And so the end result is that Tesla understood this, but the point I'm making here is that when Morgan and Westinghouse and those guys came in that were financing Tesla's projects, when they found out what he was doing, they came in and shut him down. They tore down the Wardenclyffe Tower with the the bogus claim that if the Germans got to New York, this is during World War One. If they got to New York, they would come and get this technology and take it away, and it'd be advanced technology. So at any rate, and then there's the bogus information about Tesla is that he was using this to transmit power. Well, the question, it begs the question, where was he getting the power to transmit? Because he already had sold his technology, generator and grid system technology to Westinghouse, with a non-compete agreement. The only thing that he didn't sign for non-compete agreement is the generation of electricity from the atmosphere. That was a totally different product. But anyway, the point is that Westinghouse, J.P. Morgan, and the boys, the banker boys, understood that energy was the future. Charging you, the public, energy was the future. And anybody that would come along to offer inexpensive energy from a natural source was not welcome. And so you might imagine that the wind generator would be not welcome. If you look at General Electric, Siemens, etc., these companies that are marketing the three-blade wind turbines, and also these central power companies, which sell you energy at a premium cost, by the way, which is going up and will go up, and as I said, with the PG&E deal, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Be prepared for your energy bill to skyrocket. It's going to go through the ceiling, But anyway, the point is that very early in this production of energy as a product, the powers that be realized that that was their ticket to ride forever. So the coal, the iron industry, reserve mining, also owned by J.P. Morgan, took over nefariously from the Mesabi brothers. That's a whole another story in itself, which I talk about. The reserve mining of minerals. These guys were positioning themselves, and now the same people are positioning themselves in front of water, and that's what the world climate change baloney is all about, is the control of water and natural resources that are required for your being, for your existence, for your well-being. And so this is just getting you up to the point where energy is being sold as a product. They realized very early on that it was all about the money. But let's get back to the idea. By the way, when I was working on Tesla technology, which is something I rediscovered, this is back in the when I published my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, the technology for the rediscovery of what Tesla was actually doing, I published in that book. And then in my weather book, The Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun-Earth Weather, I expand on that, what Tesla was really doing. But in my research and trying to replicate what Tesla was doing, I realized that what he was doing was a very bad idea on a big scale. Back in the early 1900s, New York City was about the size of, let's say, some minor city in the United States today. And, of course, today with the vast amount of power we're using, et cetera, the use of vertical electric field current and capturing it with Wardenclyffe Tower type of towers is an extremely bad idea. It would be environmentally horrific. And plus, there's no way to control it when we have solar storms. So using that type of technology to garner energy is a very bad idea. So what I turned to was wind, because the same electric currents that come from the sun every day build up the wind on this planet. And talk about a renewable resource, wind is the ultimate renewable resource. The sun only shines a couple hours during the day. The sunlight is a terrible source of renewable energy, because only a couple hours of the day, and if it's raining or whatever during the nighttime, it doesn't work. Wind is blowing all the time. And if you look around the world, the net sum total of energy around the world is constant with respect to wind, not solar. Okay, so anyway, and that wind is renewed every day because of the electrical currents that drive our weather systems that come from the sun, very powerful weather systems. So wind is the source of energy that is free, not vertical electric field, not the ionosphere, as Tesla was trying to do, which he succeeded in doing, by the way, before they tore down the Wardenclyffe Tower and defunded his Colorado Springs project. He was successful. He was lighting up lights all over the Southwest Desert in Colorado Springs. He blew out a local power station generator, which he had to pay for because of the success he was having in running the currents underground, not through the atmosphere, but in the ground. He had the resonance frequency of the ground. He understood that. But there's no way to control it. And so what Tesla was doing was very innovative, but not practical on a large scale. Okay, so anyway, getting back to wind and the cost of energy. So if you take energy as you see it today, the coal cars, the mining of coal, the railroad trains, the storage, the big generator plant that burns the coal, turns it to steam, the immense amount of heat going into the atmosphere, or nuclear, the nuclear processing, the vast amount of regions that have to be destroyed to get nuclear fuel. People are trying to tell you now that nuclear is a green source of energy. It is not. It is the worst polluting, most environmentally damaging source of energy on the planet. But that was the plan all along with General Electric, to put out a three-blade wind turbine that did not work, and after 15 or 20 years, when the public finally woke up that, hey, this crap won't work, it won't solve the energy problem, then, doggone it, we got to go back to nuclear. That's what's going on today. I just saw another video, some clown getting on there telling you how wind and solar won't work, so we, doggone it, we got to get back to that clean nuclear power. Oh, man, are you people being sold a bill of goods out there? Unbelievable. Okay, so anyway, what if, in the economic sense, you go back to having extremely low-cost energy? That hot dog at the park, at the ballpark, instead of $8, would now be about 20 cents because everybody's electric and energy base, their footprint would go down extremely, down tremendously. And the same for natural gas or nuclear, the cost of those energies to build the power plants, good grief, this Hinkley power plant in UK, up to something like $38 billion to build a 1 gigawatt power plant. Absolute insanity, and it'll probably never see, it'll probably never generate a watt of electricity. Boy, are those people being taken to the cleaners. Okay, so anyway, imagine a world in which energy was literally almost free. The people like Joe Biden and Hunter Biden would actually have to go out and get a real job. You know, the energy industries would that really control the world would fade away overnight. And the grip that this has on the public would go away. Third world countries would finally be able to have their own energy source and not dependent on the colossal political machines that manage energy. The World Bank, its main hold on the world, besides fiat money, is energy. They're in control of the energy and now water. So at any rate, just a little discussion here on what would happen if we had extremely inexpensive energy from a natural source. Like I said, the wind is renewed every day from electric currents, electrical currents, literally, in the solar system around planet Earth as we discharge the solar capacitor. So why do you think they don't want my work out there? Well, it bites right into the heart of the energy and water industries. Anyway, about out of time here for today. Remember my webpage, 15% off on water filters, water filter elements, no need for add-on filters, and free shipping to the 48 states. My paid cast and the wing generators available all on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.